I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system deal. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Scottish Rugby Podcast brought to you by the Scottish Rugby Blog. I am Cammy Black. We've got quite a full pod tonight. But not a full roster. There's only three of us here this evening. I'm joined by Craig Manson. Good evening, Craig.
Good evening, all. How are we doing?
And good evening, John Anderson.
Good evening. I'm really liking, if Johnny could just delay turning up for a while, I'm loving like having this bottom space to myself here.
That's I thought you were going to say you're loving having me and Craig on top of you, John, and that was...
That's Saturday's chat. Let's make a boy blush, so, Cam. Obviously.
Yeah, that's for
not very many people enjoy me being on top of them. I'm a bit heavy for that. Nope, sorry.
Yes,
right. That's your first strike. Your first ever strike, Craig.
I think that's actually his first ever. That's well done.
Well, it'll be beeped out on the audio podcast anyway. If you're watching live, apologies for Craig's little slip up there. You'll behave for the rest of the podcast. And we're on YouTube, Twitter, and Twitch at the moment live. We will also make the podcast available for audio download afterwards on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Alexa, anywhere else you can get podcasts, you will find us. We've also got Patreon, which is patreon.com/Scottish Rugby Podcast. And from £3 a month, you can get a bonus weekly episode that we record after the main podcast where we're allowed to swear, Craig. You just got the wrong part of the show. We kind of talk about stuff outside of Scottish rugby, things that we don't really get time to talk about on the main podcast. That's where Hands in the Ruck is these days as well. The big news, though, just to remind everybody, we've talked about this on the last two podcasts, but this Saturday, Super Saturday, we will be at Portobello Rugby Club doing the podcast live. It'll be fun and games. I believe there's going to be a touch tournament going on as well. We will, all the games are going to be broadcast live. Our plan is to do a pre-match preview live with a couple of guys from Portobello Rugby, and we'll all be there. We've got me, Craig, John, Ian, and Johnny all there. Do a pre-match chat, do a bit of halftime analysis, and then we'll record a post-match podcast that will then be available for download afterwards in audio format, if I can work out how to record live. So that's a big if. It's a big if. Hopefully you'll be able to all download that. So that is all afternoon at Portobello Rugby Club, I think probably from about 1 o'clock onwards. We'll have all the games. We're going to do some Portobello, Porty v the Pod fun and games. We've got quizzes and drinking games, no doubt, as well. All sorts of fun.
You said quizzes multiple.
Yes.
Oh, Cameron.
Oh, no, here we go.
Don't tease me, son.
I've got a 3-hour train journey on Friday night.
True.
I thought I should really start planning what we're doing for the live pods this afternoon. And I thought, I've got a 3-hour train journey. I've got all the time in the world to do.
3 hours prep time with what we usually do to prepare is, you know, that's like a lifetime.
It's like when someone uses the full capacity of their brain.
Well, I've slowly been preparing for the live pod. I started with one drink on the weekend, and then I've built it up slowly so that I don't look like a doofus.
Training hard. Oh, that's good.
Training hard.
I'm pleased to hear it. Pleased to hear you taking it seriously, Craig. So we're looking forward to that. If you're going to be there, give us a shout, because we want as many of you lovely listeners to be there as possible. Hopefully there'll be a full house as well. I think in the past they've served, there's been some sort of lamb curry dish served for £2 a pop as well. I don't know if that's on this weekend, but that's a bargain. I'm gonna have to turn up with a load of with a Greg stash because I don't think there's any vegetarian options.
Just turn up with a few veggies and go, look, could you just give me some of the sauce and get these sorted for me and get going?
That's like I went to the both times I've been to the men's dinner at Berwick, and once I was a speaker and once I went, I've been a couple of times with my dad as well as a guest. And I've done a kind of don't ask, don't tell policy with the gravy. Because it's delicious, but I don't want to know what's in it.
I once
let it slip to my vegetarian wife that my mum and dad just cook the Christmas roast potatoes and goose fat for the for Christmas, and it's her favourite part of the whole Christmas dinner. And I then accidentally let it slip that, and that she wasn't happy at all for some reason. I don't know why.
It was a chip shop in Leeds used to deep fry. I think people still do like fry chips in dripping.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't realise till I went in the second time to order chips and then saw the big sign. And...
You didn't realise when you were getting taken away on a gurney. Clear!
So yeah, that's enough of the chip chat anyway. We've got some news this week. There's a couple of bits of news. Leroy Atalifa, I pronounced that right, I believe. Craig has re-signed for Edinburgh today.
Yeah, he has, yeah. Yeah, these are the sort of meat and two veg guys that we need within the team that are going to be there whenever you need them, especially when the superstars are away performing as they are performing. He's a good prop. He does a good job. It's good. From what I can read, it's only just in the usual way that they've described it, it looks like it's just a year extension. But it's good to have him here. He's fitted in well, and he's doing a good job. So he deserves his extension.
Good. The other news, which kind of has taken us by surprise tonight, and I believe Johnny may have some views on this in the Patreon pod later on, is JP Doyle. Is now head of high performance for referees and officiating at the SRU, which is kind of, I don't know, it's kind of come from nowhere, that.
Was JP Doyle not living in Scotland or something?
He is. Now, this is the thing. He is, because he's... Now, he is here, like, this is a kind of a hell of a job share, this, right? This is in the official... He was worked as a referee and coach in the United States in Major League Rugby. And yep. As a part-time teacher at Craig Clowan Preparatory School in Perthshire.
Right. Yeah,
how are you doing those two jobs? Is he just like on a Wednesday, just like, that's me, I'm jumping on a plane to the MLR?
So do you remember what JP Doyle was like as a referee? Then you'll remember that his coaching mechanisms for teaching high-performance referees in the US might not have been necessarily as robust as perhaps other people would tend to do. So I would imagine he wasn't paying too much attention to his role over there.
Yeah. Well, look, it's quite exciting because they've also seemed to have announced, now I don't know if this was already the case, but it says to oversee Scotland's four full-time referees, Mike Adamson, Ben Blaine, Holly Davidson and Sam Grove White. Now, I didn't know. I thought Mike Adamson was the only full-time referee that we had.
I didn't know that the other three were full time. If
which is good news, if so.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah. Definitely.
I knew something was coming because they were advertising for someone within the vacancies part of the SRU. That was a good couple of months ago. But the surprise was JP Doyle. But I think it's as everybody from the other nations within the Six Nations have regularly said, we do need to coach our referees a little bit better for some reason.
Everybody needs to coach the referees better. I think it's uniquely Scottish.
I think you're right on that one. Definitely, definitely. Hopefully it's a good thing.
Which French club was it that we all thought had employed a referee as their defence coach? Was that Montpellier?
They did, didn't they?
Yeah, well... Yes and no. We kind of thought it was like exclusively as a defence coach, but it was more of a similar situation where they kind of basically put a ref full time onto their payroll, but also had like defence professionals teaching how to defend, yeah. And he was almost like supporting that. But like the way the headlines were, it was like, yeah, I don't have a coaching badge, but I'm going to do some defence coaching. Basically, he's running a garage.
Yeah. The The other kind of exciting thing is he's going to upskill referee coaches throughout Scotland. So it's not just focused on elite level refereeing, and also ensure Scotland's refereeing representation continues at the highest level. And I think that's we've suffered with that over the past few years, and it's good. There's a good cohort, and I say good in the context of as good as any international referees will ever be held up to a standard, because it's rugby. And I think it was Rassi Erasmus was saying in his ridiculous interview that referees now have to make something like 30 decisions for it at the breakdown.
Wow.
Any one time.
Well, you know, he's not met a lot of the referees I know, because they're certainly not making more than three probably.
But I think
one of them is to get out of the way.
But it is that thing, I suppose, of, you know, Scott, you know, referees, I don't think, are particularly held in high regard internationally. Anyway, I don't know that there's any one referee you would say, oh, he gets everything, he's amazing, he gets everything right. Everybody's got their favourites and everyone's got the ones that we don't like. And I don't think anybody that's coming through the Scottish system is any worse than anybody else that's out there. I like Holly Davidson a lot. I think she's probably, at the moment, I would say Holly Davidson's probably our best official.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that.
You know my
views on Mike Adamson.
I think it comes, the referee comes into it where, you know, he has, you know, a referee has had a good game if your team has won. And if your team has lost, then the referee's had a really bad game. So it's kind of subjective.
There's a simplicity to that, you know. You can see games like I would argue, and we'll obviously come on to the Scotland Italy game. I know, right? No, it's not like me. I would argue that even though Scotland won, again there was baffling decisions for both teams, and that to me then strikes of a bad game. Yeah, you could argue that he's doing it to both teams, so it's okay. But if you're getting decisions wrong for both teams, then you're having a bad game. And that to me has happened more this season than I'm paying more attention to it. But let's be honest, that's unlikely.
I don't think decisions are necessarily wrong. I think so. They're all down to interpretation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're never wrong. It's just you disagree with them, and in most cases, you could come to a completely different view on what's happening.
The
Allied Price
advantage situation was wrong.
It's difficult because there's definitely wrong decisions. You know, for example, Wayne Barnes was refereeing at the weekend, and one of the tries was dropped. That's a wrong decision. But I understand exactly what you're saying, Cam. Yeah. You know, there is so much of, you know, because we'll talk about probably the England-Ireland game. You know, I could probably argue that a lot of the scrummage decisions were interpreted, in my mind, wrongly. So, you know, just as you say, it's down to each individual, and it's down to each team, and you know, I totally agree with you on that one.
Yeah, as Brody Duncan on the comments has said, he did think it was weird when he saw JP Doyle on the roster of referees for the Murchison Castle Sevens as being an SIU. Hey, that's a hell of a climb down from the refereeing the LA Guillotinis to the Murchison Castle Sevens.
That's a magnificent Where's Dougie Donnelly as well, by the way.
JP Doyle. I saw JP Doyle on the referee roster for the Merchant Castle Sevens.
He's not going to get a tan going to the Murky Sevens, that's for sure.
No, he's not. he was eating a steak bake and was sipping on a Greg's Latte.
So that's that. That'll be interesting. We'll keep an eye on that. That'll be interesting to see how that goes. Do we want to talk about the 1872 Cup? It's kind of weird that it's happening on a Friday during a national window.
When we said there would be no crossover with...
Yeah.
I think particularly an 1872 match, I can understand a dead rubber against someone like Zebra, but do you know what I mean? It feels a bit...
Yeah.
Odd.
I think it's a weird one because, you know, it's not serving either club at all. because we're not going to get, okay, fair enough, we're going to get a lot of the young boys out and they'll get a chance to live the 1872 Cup, and they'll get the pressure and they'll get the yeah, it serves them quite well. But on the other side of things, it's, you know, especially, I think there's been a couple of comments online about prices for tickets for Scotstoun. And so it's not really, you know, it's not serving the fans incredibly well on that side of things, you know.
It's hard to justify when the ticket prices are set, obviously, and we've had this debate on here before, but the ticket prices are obviously set based on demand, but also this year were particularly set based on the idea that internationals were going to be available much more. You know, that was the flagship URC kind of bold proclamation, wasn't it? And obviously we're well aware that circumstances have dictated that that's obviously not going to happen this year. You know, we're still in a global pandemic, so... You know, but then is there an element of ticket prices maybe should be adjusted to maybe reflect the experience of the players who will be going out there? I don't think either team are going to necessarily have they're not going to have their internationals as per well aware, so it'll be quite sparse.
Is it really wrong if we to be hoping that Blair Kinghorn doesn't get to go to Ireland?
I mean, no, it's not wrong of you. You can hope. Please feel free. Hope.
I'd quite like him to be available to go to the beach.
I did enjoy the fact that the offside line gave Adam Hastings 5 out of 10 just for being what I assume is up to date on his vaccines. did what you had to do to be selected, where others
he had to do to be selected and be available for the team or something like that, wasn't it? It was like, it was total shade.
Yeah, I don't know what the situation is with traveling to Ireland, Craig.
Yeah, I haven't really looked it up, to be honest with you. I'm not entirely sure, but you know, a lot of us have to get a shot to go over to Glasgow anyway, so
I would presume that because Gregor Townsend said that a certain King Blair Horn was only going to miss one match, I would presume that someone had read their travel status website and knew that Ireland was probably okay.
Yeah, but I think you've got, but Hastings is back in the squad now. I'm not going to get into a preview podcast here, but it'd be interesting to see who's released from tomorrow and if they then end up in the Ember and Glasgow squads, because it's quite a short turnaround for them.
It will be interesting.
Okay. The women's Six Nations squad has been announced. Craig, got a 35 women's squad named by Brian Easton. We're going to do a proper full Six Nations preview next week. And give it some proper time, but there's not any kind of particular surprises, I don't think, in the squad. It's fairly settled now.
Yeah, it's a settled. Well, you'd be foolish to go into such a major competition. In my humble opinion, you'd be foolish going into a major competition without the team members that have just got you qualified for the World Cup. They've been playing together, for some time now. The additions that have been brought in have performed very, very well. I think it's a strong squad. I think we've got a good chance of taking a couple of scalps. We'll see how many points England are going to put across everybody else.
Well, that's true. That's what it might come down to. And again, we'll talk about that next week. In a bit more detail.
Absolutely.
Give it the time it needs. Shall we do then? I think that's it for the news. No other news. Don't think Glasgow haven't re-signed anybody or signed anybody, have they, John?
No, just no. Darge was last week, wasn't he?
Darge was last week.
Yeah, because that annoyed quite a few people, which was pleasant on Twitter.
Let's do the Italy game then. get around to it. It just felt deeply unsatisfying. That's where I am with it. And, you know, I know David Barnes was on Twitter saying, you know, it's a results-based business. Why is everyone so down? But it was 20 minutes of just, at the end, 20 minutes of just nothing. Amateur level brain farted. It was like they were on the plane home.
Yeah, they basically won the game in a 20-minute period, and it was telling. The first 20-30 minutes were deeply unsatisfying, and you know, we scored a couple of tries kind of in spite of ourselves, and then a couple of decent tries after half time, but really we never ever looked, and I think the problem is we never looked in any danger, but also we never looked like we were going to tear them apart. And I think Scotland fans have been clamouring, certainly I've been clamouring, for them to cut loose and really just give someone an absolute spanking. And Italy were there for that and should have been there for that. And like, no disrespect to Italy, I think they played much better than they have, but ultimately they're not a team that we should be considering to even be remotely in the same league as us, and we should be looking to absolutely smack them about. And we didn't. We let them play, and our discipline, which we'll come on to, was the key in that. We let them in, and then, as you say, 20 minutes to go, I'm fairly sure we must have removed most of our players, because we didn't actually. We kept them all on despite the fact they were all blown. But you know, let's not worry too much about that. Eh? The guys were halfway home, as you say.
Yeah, I mean it's strange, Craig, because the only player who took the game by the scruff of the neck was Ali Price, and it's argued. I mean, he played a part in pretty much every try that Scotland scored and was instrumental in them all. It's kind of concerning in a way that, were it not for Ali Price, that the outcome of that game could have been very different, because he was the only one who took the chances when they were there.
Yes, I agree with you on that. But again, we go back to this point of, we have certain individuals within the team who decide to take it themselves and to get on with things, and they have to, they almost, you know, It's almost the whole thing, but you know, Hoggy did exactly the same, but he didn't get the results that he was looking for, because he never gets the results currently that he's looking for when he decides that he's going to overplay. And not that I'm saying Ali Price overplayed, I'm just saying that it shouldn't be down to Ali Price to take his moments and get on with it. It should be down to the whole team to work with him. There was a couple of times he went down some blind alleys and he got a fair smacking around, but that's going to happen. But I think he deserved his man of the match. I think actually both him and Pierre Schumann played incredibly well, and what you know, he certainly answered his critics of, you know, he's as we discussed before, he's really grown into an international player, and I certainly wouldn't want to, I don't know what player it was, but I wouldn't want to be on the end of a ruck clearance.
That was brutal. That was absolute brutality.
Fully lawful, but wow, I wouldn't want to be on the end of that one.
I was really surprised they didn't take a look at it though, just because of the ferocity of it. It was unreal. I've not seen a clear out like that in many a year. That was really, really, I mean, massive, and it's what Scotland needed. They needed someone like Schumann to be like, I'm going to go and absolutely obliterate someone, just to try energy, confidence, things that we've associated with this Scotland team since the World Cup. None of it was there. And I think I take the point you're making about Ali Price, Craig. I think it's more like every player has to make their individual moments happen. And I think Ali Price had a couple of moments of almost magic, but also he played his role very well. He created things. He had composure when others didn't. Mm. The thing for me is he should have been off at 60 minutes, because Velikot should have been brought on at 60. Ali Price was knackered. He was like, first 60 minutes, watch his breakdown speed. It's good. Gets the breakdowns. He makes his passes. He's there most of the time. After 60 minutes, it's every third ruck he's hitting. And he's puffing. And when he comes off, I mean, we've all looked at backs when they come off, and it looked like a prop forward waddling off.
But this is my big problem with the whole substitutes, bin juice, whatever you want to call them. You know, they giving someone 5 minutes at the end is an absolute joke. But why bother? And you know, because Velikot when he came on looked incredibly up for it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and it's the same thing with George Horn. George Horn always, when he was coming off the bench, if he got a proper amount of time, he would turn the game on its head, or at least he would add to what's going on. But you know, and the same with Hastings, you know, you've got Hastings there for a reason. Use him. Didn't he give him 5 minutes at the end?
I'm very surprised with the Hastings one as well, actually, because Finn Russell wasn't playing well.
No, and neither was Stuart Hogg. And I think this is what it comes down to. It's a kind of third game in a row now where we're saying Hogg and Russell, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a game plan. Russell just doesn't look like he's able to make things happen. I mean, yeah, you know, he threw the pass for Darcy's try, but they've got him sitting really deep at times in attack. Yeah. And he's a player that likes to take it to the line a lot. So I don't know if this is the new attack coach, if it's the Townsend thing or what, but it's not working. Whatever they're trying to do isn't working. And at times it didn't look like the players really knew what they were supposed to be doing or where they were supposed to be standing. And even in the last, that last Italy try, the defence, nobody knew where they were supposed to be in defence. And that's really worrying.
You see everybody shouting at each other, but no one's actually taking control and like organizing. And I think on the Finn thing, I think there is an element of the new attack coach, but actually are we being harsh because we're judging the impact of a new attack coach versus the defence coach? Obviously Tandy came in and almost had an instant impact, whereas Scotland have had some really good attack coaches for a long time. And maybe, you know, again, it's a results-based business. Maybe this guy just isn't quite as good as some of the guys we've had. But Finn Russell, to me, looked absolutely shattered. He looked like a guy who had played two seasons of rugby consecutively. Mm-hmm. And he looked like a guy needed a break. And I think you'll find, look, summer tour, he's not going to be going on that, let's be fair. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see him take a decent chunk of time off rugby just over the summer months to try and recharge, because he looks... he is deeper, but he's not got that burst of pace just to take it to the line. He's not got that desire to take it to the line because his body's been battered for 2 years. He probably
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, especially with a lot of the criticism that's been put towards him regarding getting back into the attack, etc. He is looking a little bit jaded.
Yeah.
Desire's the right word. He doesn't seem to have a desire to. Whereas when he was making his name and he was looking for the big contract and this, that, he had the desire. He was playing well. But French rugby, as we all know, when you're playing the top 14, and you're an internationalist, you ain't getting any time off whatsoever.
It was a Lions year, so yeah, the top 14. He's played through to the semis of the top 14. Went straight onto the Lions tour, got injured, sat with an injury, then played the final test, then came straight back. I think he had 3 weeks off, and he's then went straight back into the top 14. He's had 2 weeks off for racing throughout the season, and he played for Scotland in the autumn. He's played for Scotland in the Six Nations. It's a grueling schedule.
I think there's something as well about, and I think this probably applies to Hogg as well, is when you're physically tired, then it takes a toll mentally as well, it affects your decision-making.
Yeah,
I just don't think that Hogg and Russell at the minute are seeing what's in front of them, and they're not making the right decisions at the right time. And the decisions they're perfectly capable of making, like with Hogg, we've seen Hogg make the right decisions with time to kick and time to run. But we've also seen times when he's constantly run up a blind alley and tried to take a game by the scruff of the neck when he really doesn't need to. And I think Finn looks shaken when he's tired and he's not off his game, and Hogg tries to overplay. And that's what they're both doing. And I think you're right, John. I think you've hit nail on the head. I think they're both tired.
Yeah.
I was
going to say, and then you look at the different ways they handle that as well and look at their personalities. And again, you've got that, you know, Russell doesn't look happy, but he also almost it's masking that by the laughing, the smiling, the kind of just, he's not as confident as he usually is. Whereas Hogg, you see the frustration creeping into Stuart Hogg's game. You see the punching his hands. How many times did you see that at the weekend? The amount of mistakes he's making. And for me, Hogg's a guy who he makes mistakes and then he compounds them. He's not able to bounce back as well from mistakes as Russell does. But Russell's making mistakes and then compounding them just now as well. So they're almost feeding off each other's negativity.
Yeah. I did enjoy Scott Hastings claiming that Stuart Russell is now the only player in the world who can do a spiral kick.
Yeah. I mean, Hastings had some belters at the weekend, let's be honest. Big fan of his Galileo chat. I don't know what it was. He'd in context.
It wasn't in context. He'd obviously written it before the game.
Yeah.
And then decided halfway through, I really need to have... Look, I spent an entire afternoon looking up Galileo on Wikipedia under lists of famous Italians. I need to use this quote.
We're going to have to go into Wikipedia and go into, you know, Plato and Galileo and all these different, and just add a wee nugget in there to see if he's going to get caught out on it, you know?
It's a new stream for you, Cam.
I know, philosophers. I've got to find philosophers associated with Six Nations rugby matches to try and catch Scott Hastings out.
Charles Le Gaulle, we could probably do something with him. I bet he'll get a wee mention when we play France next. So we could possibly do something there.
Yeah.
That's
too wide ranging for me to go and try and change.
The thing is, so, and I don't know if this is just because I'm feeling meh about what's going on at the moment with the Six Nations, with Scotland. But I also felt that, please, to everyone out there, this isn't a dig at Glasgow players. It really isn't. It's just unfortunate that
it's Glasgow players they're going to dig at.
I just felt that, you know, that Steyn had a lovely moment of genius with that kick over for Chris Harris's try, but you almost could put Tuipulotu and Sam Johnson in and out, and you wouldn't. I honestly don't think you'd notice a difference. And I wasn't so sure that Steyn, I thought, I don't know whether it's his gait, I don't know whether it's how he runs, but I felt he looked slow. But am I reacting because I'm used to seeing Darcy running at 600 mile an hour, or his legs are going at 600 mile an hour? And you know, I'm not entirely sure what it is about, Steyn, but more the 12 position that just seems a bit meh at the moment.
I don't think you're wrong, because with Steyn, I mean, Steyn's tackle success was 50% of the weekend, which is pretty poor. And he conceded 3 turnovers and made 3 handling errors, which is amongst the highest in the team. You look at the centre, actually, Sam Johnson and Chris Harris both on 92 and 87% tackle completion. So that's a pretty solid pairing. Mm. But I don't know. I agree with you, Craig. I thought, you know, Kyle Steyn is... You know, had a great game against Tonga, and everyone was absolutely convinced because he'd got on the end of some balls, some ends of some passes, that he was the next, you know, he was the next option at wing. But he had an all right game. I'm not saying he had a bad, but the stats don't lie, and that's a pretty poor defensive performance. I mean, nobody else had a great day at the office, but that's particularly poor. And I'm not saying that you know, Doohan would have necessarily done any better. It's just that wasn't a great defensive performance against an opposition like Italy. And you know, I'm really happy for Italy that they scored the 22 points, because I really hope that'll do something for their confidence. And I think we need a competitive Italy in the Six Nations. Mm. But, you know, it's great for their confidence. But I don't think any of that was down to any Italian brilliance, more so just our complete and utter defensive collapse on Scotland's part, which Kyle Steyn was unfortunately kind of at fault for a couple of those.
And also the point, sorry, John, but just to add on to my point, it's not the problem I have is that if you say to me, come back to me and say, right, well, Craig, okay, get rid of Kyle Steyn, who else would you put in? For those that were available that weekend, I'm not entirely sure. Is Rufus McLean the answer? I haven't really looked at his stats.
He's injured anyway, mate.
He's injured anyway. So, you know, do you think he would have started if he wasn't injured?
There's Sean Maitland, but he said he's not prepared to be. He's not prepared to come up unless he's got a chance with coming up with coming in, because he's got a young family, and that's, they listen to his age. That's understandable.
Yeah. It's a difficult one, and as I say, Kyle Steyn is a great player for Glasgow, and he does a great job for Glasgow, and he has, just as you say, he's been on the end of some good passages of play, and he was almost on the end of a fantastic kick, and he would have got a try if Sammy Johnson hadn't decided to say, screw you, I'm going to have that myself. It's interesting.
I mean, John, Bury Duncan's about Kyle Rowe, we've seen the pictures of him in mullet and a flow in all the training pictures. Why, you know, that there's an Italy game, we know what Kyle Steyn can do against that opposition, why not give him a run? It seems, on reflection, a weird decision.
Well, I think it all comes down to the very thing you said right at the start. This is a results-based business, and Gregor Townsend is under pressure again. And whether we can talk all we want about credit in the bank and what have you, he's had a very, very... This has been a very poor Six Nations for Scotland so far. England game, we won it in spite of ourselves. The last two games have been very poor, and they have been a backward step. Certainly in defence, we've not looked nearly as stable as we have done previously. So I think the option to gamble against Italy was removed when we got scudded by France. So Kyle Rowe's position was gone at that point. Steyn's a solid, dependable person. Yes, he missed tackles. The two wingers were both... Now, I'm going to say this, and this is, again, not... And actually, I'm blaming the third wheel in all this. Both wingers had a poor game defensively, and I think there was an element of what was behind them was causing a lot of problems from a system point of view. Because Steyn missed tackles, Darcy Graham missed tackles. There was a turnstile standing behind them as well, which was causing problems. There's, for me, Steyn done all right. And to be very clear, I've never proclaimed him to be the next coming of anything. I think he's a very, very solid club player who can do a job internationally, but he's not going to be world class. And that's the thing. And I think if other people had been available, they would have played.
Yeah. Darcy Graham, just for completion, Darcy Graham made 67% of his tackles and Stuart Hogg made 71%. So across the back three, it's not great. Do you know, out of the whole of Scotland, do you know who had the highest percentage of dominant tackles in that game?
Well, I have got the stats in front of me, but I'll let you have it because I brought the stats.
Is it Gilchrist?
No, it's Darcy Graham.
Darcy Graham. Right. The thing is, the problem is, and you know, things get bad when you've got a 12-year-old on his first cap for Italy, powering over and scoring tries through your defence.
A 12-year-old who looks like he hasn't seen the sunlight ever. A 12-year-old who looks like he might actually be in twilight.
Yeah, he looks like one of the moody ones in the background, mind you.
He does, yeah, yeah. Aye, he probably does, yeah. Yeah. Like, I was fairly sure he was Sparkle when he scored these tries. I was concerned about his vampiric nature.
What happened to vampires not going out in the sun and burning?
I know, right? Change that. No,
young people have changed the rule. You can't change the rules on vampires.
Yeah, no. Like, one book lady changed that because it wouldn't be romantic enough. Like, if you, like, you're like, oh, look at me, I'm a monster.
Apparently, what a load of woke nonsense.
I know. Get that clacks out, Cameron. Yeah, to be fair, dominant tackles percentage is closely following Darcy Graham. Is Kyle Steyn, by the way. So
10%. Yeah, that's true.
That's one thing I would say, however, though, if you do watch, and that is probably what disappointed me the most was the fact that the Italian forwards were getting 5 yards and let's go to modern standards, 5 meters through every collision. Yeah. They were very rarely were they getting put back and back on their backsides, and so it was I found that difficult to watch because I just felt you know, I know that I've always talked about how the Italians are getting their act together with their forwards, and they've got a very strong forward pack. But surely we should be, we've got a strong forward pack. Should they not be putting them? And you look at George Turner. George Turner is growing and growing as a player, and he's looking really, really good. But then he does something silly, he went in over a ruck. Just the same aggression as Pierre Schumann, but went straight off his feet.
Yeah.
And it was like, how long have you been playing now as a professional rugby player? Come on. And it's just little things. Because don't get me wrong, I think he's the future. I love him as a player. I really, you know, he's burst through on the wing to set up the first try. He was absolutely phenomenal. So I'm not trying to take it. It's not so much him. It's more the fact of
the decision making
and empowering the guys to make these decisions, you know.
And it's like, well, the case point with the line out that we got pinged for, where the referee clearly told Xander you can't join the line out until it's formed, until it's thrown in. That's you're standing as a receiver, and yet he joined it before it had been thrown, and it's, you're given a warning, you're told by the referee, and it just at that level you have to listen and you have to react. There were so many things we got, just the fact that we've been pinged for offside.
Yeah.
It's such a simple thing. It's such an easy thing not to do.
But to be fair, I would rather we were being pinged for offside and making sure that we're still smashing people behind the game line in front, not an Italian pack.
Yeah.
We were doing both. We were conceding offsides, but we were also giving them 5 meters on every carry. And I think, like, for me, so it looked like a team short of confidence, right? You've got your key decision makers completely out of form. You've got players, there's a couple injuries, but you've got players who are really just trying to find their feet in this team. Confidence looked completely lacking, and the Xander thing for me was really interesting. I think in attack, what Scotland have just now is that lack of confidence then breeds. So you always talk about what do you do under pressure? You go back to process.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were doing was they were brain dead following attacking structures or what I've been told to do. Xander's standing there going, but I've been told to go on the line out. The referee's told me not to, but I don't know what to do. And the confidence aspect of it, they're not able to make those decisions and adjust, which is why you're seeing so many breakdown penalties. You're seeing so many attacking errors because people are just not able to think because they're so lacking in confidence.
And we come back to who are we missing in the pack? You're missing Jamie Ritchie. And I do wonder if we're missing someone. What you're missing is, and this is something I'm not coming back to. I know Johnny's not here, and I kind of feel like I'm subtweeting him on the podcast, but like fullbacks as captains. We've lost a big leader in Jamie Ritchie in the forwards, and you need, I'm not sure who the leader in the forwards is right now. I don't know who's the one that's saying, come on, lads, let's stop giving away these stupid penalties. Let's get it together. Who's the one that's speaking to the referee? Who's the one that's...
You would expect it to be Grant Gilchrist based on experience. And
you would do. And, you know, and a Grant Gilchrist has been fine and actually got through a hell of a lot of work at the weekend.
Yeah, he done well.
Yeah,
fine.
Yeah.
I like Grant Gilchrist. He's fine. He's been fairly consistent across the Six Nations. I don't think, though, that he's the kind of player that will do that kind of, you know, the organisation and the come on and gathering everybody around and saying, we need to just sort ourselves out. I'm not sure he's a leader like that. I'm not sure he's a leader in that sense of, you know, this isn't working. We need to try something else. Let's problem solve on the hoof.
Yeah,
I'm not. I just don't think that's there in the forwards. And I don't know. I think it's Jamie Ritchie and Johnny Gray not being there.
Yeah, and even Scott Cummings as well. Not to highlight like Glasgow players or former Glasgow players, but I think they're. I think they are both very like for that part of things. They are talented players. I think Jamie Ritchie is, to add balance, Jamie Ritchie is the massive loss in that pack. I think he's the absolute leader in that group. I don't think you've got a natural leader there. If you look at the starting eight, the fact that a guy like Matt Ferguson, who's not necessarily a natural leader, was standing out in terms of his aggression and the way he was kind of smashing people and almost G-ing people up with that. That's, you need someone to still keep ahead and talk and just absolutely get things done. Jamie Ritchie being missing, massive, massive loss. And you see it, for me, there is a lack of intelligence. If you look at the Scotland pack as they were at the weekend, there's a lack of intelligence there in the way people were approaching it. Xander, for all his talents, is really brain dead at times and has been throughout his career. And that was replicated throughout that front eight.
Johnny, we're just saying that fullbacks are crap captains.
Yeah, basically.
I agree with that.
Yeah, because they drink protein shakes and don't like sleeves.
We're going to make a drinking game out of your sleeves, Johnny. It's going to be like, oh, he turns out it's the gun shoe.
Well, when he, on the live pod, whatever he wears with sleeves are getting taken off.
Absolutely.
No, I'm bringing scissors.
Drink a pint through them.
So please don't.
pint
I've got a Scotland vest if you'd rather wear that.
I just want to pick up one thing though, John, and I'll say this, and there might be howls from the East Coast, but if Johnny Gray and Grant and Scott Cummings weren't injured, you wouldn't have Grant Kilchrist on the pitch.
No, you absolutely wouldn't. So
that's if we're saying that, you know, Grant Kilchrist really should, you know, with his experience, etc., should be leading. Well, not really, because he's not used to being on.
Suggesting that he was leading because he's the next off the rank.
I
think it's a failure of coaching though that once those leaders have gone, that there isn't any natural leaders within the pack.
Let's be honest though, Gilchrist has been talked up as a natural leader. You know, we had the famous Vern giving him the captaincy. All those years ago, and he's always been there around, and he is a leader. He's captained Edinburgh many, many times. Mm-hmm. He is a leader, and he should, like, for me, doesn't matter if you're third choice, you're there, and half the battle, and we've joked about this week, but a massive part of being the best in your position is being available to play, and Gilchrist is the guy in charge just now, and for me, there's a leadership aspect there that maybe, whether he's expected to do it or not, I would be expecting him to be kind of stepping up and just being able to lead with the age he is, the amount he's went through with Edinburgh, you know, the amount he's been through with Scotland as well. But you're right, you know, maybe the fact that he is third choice, there might be a coaching failure there that is almost like we concentrate in the front two. And then, oh, you're next off the rank, but we don't really expect much of you, mate. It's fine. Which would be a shame.
Johnny, what's your take on the kind of leadership across Scotland at the minute? Because I think the points we were making before you came on was just, it all seems very directionless on the pitch in defence and attack.
Yeah. I think we've said this before, that some of the people who we look to as leaders seem to think that means doing everything themselves, which it doesn't necessarily. And especially for someone whose personality is like Hoggy, the more he does it himself, the more he starts to force things, and the less likely they are to come off. I think what we kind of need is maybe almost even a bit of sort of selfless leadership, to be a bit more pragmatic and to not try and take on so much. I don't think that being a captain and a main playmaker suits Hoggy. I think it's too much for him to try and do at one time, personally.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Is there anything else we need to cover from the weekend?
I was just going to say, no, we've talked vampires, we've talked leadership, we've talked confidence. There's going to be plenty in Hands of the Rock.
Alan McDonald has suggested that the factor 50 for vampires, that's how they're all out in the daylight these days.
Ah, modern science.
Yeah. That's why I didn't have Factor 50 back in Nosferatu's day, did you?
That's a new compound.
I would say, however, that Luke Pearce, no matter what anybody says about referees, did a very, very good job when it came to. I think, again, we go back to what you said, Cammy, about it's all subjective. But I thought, you know, he is slowly but surely coming into the point of being one of the best referees that there is within the group of.
I think he's great. I like Luke Pearce a lot.
Yeah. Very, very clear. Very, very instructive. Talked to it. Didn't get too much into the whole thing of, you know, get your hands out of the air or, you know, all that sort of thing. He was a little bit less instructive on the field, but he's very clear when he's talking to people.
I don't know if it's his communication style that makes him. Like for me, I would suggest he was one of the more coachy referees, but it's maybe just his communication style because he's so clear that you actually hear it more.
Yeah.
But I certainly was frustrated at the weekend with the amount of coaching he was doing, particularly on kick return. Yeah. Particularly on like
he screamed. He did scream at one point.
11.
11. Yeah. Don't tell him he's offside, Chris.
Yeah. And I'm not going to let it slip. That decision regarding the advantage for Scotland and that let's just let it play, let's just see what happens, that was actually ridiculous. And Scotland ended up kicking from 20 metres behind because he's just decided, you know what, no, I'm just going to keep the advantage going for ages. Despite the fact, every other advantage, he was playing like three plays and going. That was baffling to me. And
there's been some insanely long advantages this tournament.
Yeah.
Was it on Friday night? There was one that was just like unbelievable.
Yeah. They really need to start thinking about, like, for me, the advantage situation needs to be looked at as a, right, so if it's a penalty, I get that actually a penalty is a point scoring opportunity. So advantage therefore is you have to create a point scoring opportunity or something equal to that. On a knock on, like if Ali Price turns around to you and says, I'll have the scrum, sir, there's no advantage being gained. Like as long as you pass the point where the knock on happens, that's advantage gained and it should just play on. But if you're going 20 metres behind where you are, that's not advantage.
Yeah. Good. We'll sort out the
Did you mention the fact that Kyle Steyn better never pay for a drink around Sam Johnson ever again, by the way, because that was ridiculous. I felt so sorry for him.
I watched it back just before we came on, and part of me wondered the line that Sam Johnson runs. I'm not sure how much of it might have been a bit of a planned move because I don't think because Kyle Steyn's flat completely flat footed. If he'd caught that pass, I don't think he would have scored.
Yeah,
watching it back,
I think he would have scored. He didn't have even though he was like at a complete standstill, he didn't have much to do.
No, but there was still an Italian defense were coming across. I think it's just Sam Johnson comes in on a real proper arc.
Mm.
And actually, on the kind of arc, I wonder whether or not Kyle Steyn was actually in the right place, standing in the right place.
Yeah. You can see Steyn laughing when he's running along behind.
Yeah.
Which maybe suggests you've just nicked that straight out of my hands. we've all done that laugh, right? Yeah.
Good. Well, look, that's it for this week anyway, on the main podcast. Like I said, looking forward to seeing as many of you as can make it to Portobello Rugby Club at the weekend. Give us a shout on Twitter and Facebook if you're coming down. We'll look forward to seeing you all. Patreons, if you hang around, if you're watching live, you can catch the Patreon live stream after this. If you're listening, you can listen to the separate episode on the audio podcast as well. For the moment, though, it is goodbye from me and goodbye from Craig, John and Johnny.
Bye all.
Night, drops. Bye.